Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
You know, Dean, they say the customer is always changing.
Oh,
not
really?
Right.
Right? I mean, no, the customer is always right, dude.
Those of us in sales, we know the customer is not always right, but we're supposed to think that way. But more importantly, customers are always changing.
Changing, yes.
Which makes
yes.
it hard to know when they are right or wrong at
well,
this point.
Well, this is true.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, right.
So today's customer, you know, they have a lot more access to information.
They do.
Than they ever have before.
Yeah. Selling nightmare, by the way.
It is.
To a certain degree.
There's more competition.
Absolutely.
Not just for, you know, your business, but for their attention,
That's
for
right.
that matter,
That's
too.
Right. Yep.
So, you know, we thought today we should look at, you know, what the modern customer looks like and what maybe the next gen customer looks like,
Ooh.
Especially obviously as it pertains to our reseller channel and the
Got it.
Specialty technology business.
Yes.
Because that kind of customer has definitely been changing and evolving. I mean, I've only been in this business for 7 years now.
Yeah,
and it's,
right.
I've seen a lot of changes already.
Yeah,
amount of time.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Absolutely. How much has changed in the last couple yeah. decades or so.
Do you think some of that's generational?
I would imagine so.
Okay.
Yes.
You think we'll, yeah.
But that's not for us to figure out. We've got yeah. an expert.
Oh, yes.
Us figure out that.
Yes, we do.
We have Blue Star's own Michel Sirois from
yes.
Canada today.
Yes.
He is going to join us to talk a little bit about that evolution of the customer and, you know, what the modern customer looks like, what he thinks the next gen of customers is going to look like. We probably will get into some of that generational divides
stuff, yeah.
there.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, obviously, then the next logical step from that, which is VARs, solution integrators, MSPs. What does it look like for them to approach the modern and the next gen of buyer out there in the
nice,
market?
Nice, nice.
We're going to talk AI because I think we're contractually obligated.
We are, yes, at this
to
point.
To talk about
yes.
AI in every episode at some point, and there's an AI part to the whole
of
selling world
there is.
At
yes.
this point.
Yes,
So we got a lot of good stuff to go over, plus our usual value to the VAR, what's tech connecting with us.
I'm excited.
We got a lot of stuff.
Let's go.
It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as I mentioned, our guest today is Blue Star Canada's president, Michel Sirois. Michel, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yes.
Now, you came to us and said you wanted to be on. James Cordy pinged me a few weeks back and
yep.
said, hey, Michel says he wants to be on the show, which
yep.
we don't get that a lot where people are just like, I want to be on. We usually, it's us chasing them
That's
down.
True. That's true.
So I'm excited that someone wants to be on and someone with Michel's depth of experience
yes.
and
yes.
position. So.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us today. Tell us a little about your background, Michel, for those who may not know you, may not be as familiar with our Canadian counterparts.
Yeah, good morning. So it is absolutely a privilege for me to be on. And by the way, I insisted because I think in our journey as a company, giving back to the community and the channel is number one. So that's the intent this morning. So very, very quickly, I've been with Blue Star for 10 years as the president of Blue Star Canada and member of the board of director. But interesting enough, prior to this, I spent almost 10 years as a vendor leading Canada. And prior to this, I was a reseller for about 9 years. So I've done full circle, and it is absolutely a tool for me moving forward and in my daily thing to properly understand all pieces of the channel. So that's a little bit of my background.
Yeah, go. Good stuff.
Our favorite kind
go.
Of guest is the person who has been on all sides of the coin,
yes.
understands what it's like to be
yes.
a reseller, understands what it's like to be a vendor, understands
yep.
what it's
yep.
like to be in our role in this
yep.
distribution role, because we've talked about it before, our channel and the way it's set up can be a little
challenging,
confusing,
a little
hard to understand.
Oh, for
you know,
sure, when you
how
first
all the
get
pieces
into it,
fit together.
Yeah,
so.
It took me years to figure out what all this was all about. Yeah,
exactly.
Good Lord.
I'm still trying to figure
yeah,
it out sometimes.
Exactly.
So thanks for joining us, then, Michel. We appreciate having you. And you know, and we wanted to get into this topic about selling. This was something you kind of recommended, talking about the you know the next gen of sales and what our modern customer looks like right
yeah.
now in this channel. So
yeah.
You know, like I mentioned up front, selling is always constantly evolving because the customers are always evolving. And whether we're talking about the expectations of the customer, again, that competition, whether it's, you know, you competing for their business or just the amount of places that customers have to go and look to find what they need. And also even all the tools that are out there, you know, there's the tools that we have to use to sell, the tools that they're using to potentially find what they're looking for out in the market. But let's talk about obviously our channel in particular. And what do you think from your point of view, what do you think the modern customer is like right now? What do they look like from the end customer view that our VARs are selling to? And what's the next generation look like? What's going to change, you know, as a younger and newer generation and the next evolution of the buyer comes up?
So a couple of points, and it is an interesting question, but a critical one for all of our future. One thing that I want to make sure is a lot of people are talking about the new generation buyer, as generational. And I'm of the opinion that is not true. It is just the evolution of the buying process and the buyers out there. And to your point, some of the critical elements that mold the way that customers are buying and procuring and making decisions are based on tools that they have today that they didn't have in the past, i.e. the web, right? So the traditional way of approaching customers in the past was feature benefit and talking about products and the the features of product A versus product B, and I could go on. Today, it's all available at a couple of clicks, right? And the requirement of these new buyers, regardless of the generation, is much more based on things that are not data, things that are not black and white, things that they can't find on the web. And Gartner released a very interesting paper a couple of years ago saying that the buying process, 56 to 60% of it, goes through self-educating prior to a buyer reaching out. That is very significant. This means that more than 50% of your buying process is done on your own, right? What are my alternatives? And ChatGPT is kicking in big times. What are my alternatives? What are some of the features that can be met with product A, B, C, D? And I could go on. So all of this that was at one point in time of value to technical buyers are no longer there. That's no longer the story you'd like to deliver because they are self-educated. And I'll give you the example of a car, right? We all shop for a car at one point in time. Statistics say, again, that the majority of car buyers, when they get into a dealership, know more about that car than the rep. So that's pretty revealing that the sales process, or the buying process, I should say, is done on the customer 50 to 60% of the time prior to calling a rep. So just on that alone, what do we do with this, right? So spec sheets and, you know, having demo units and demoing to the customer, this new generation, I don't think so. It may be in the process at one point in time, but the door opening piece, that's not it. Plus, and I'll close on this for the initial question, phone calls, right? We're allergic to phone calls. Nobody wants a call anymore. Don't call me, right? What do we do with this? So the cliche word of cold calling, what do we do with this, right? Because people, I don't want to have a phone call. How many of us pick a call when the call comes in? Very few of us, including myself, pick the phone. I prefer listening to a potential message, and the storytelling may be it's got to be pretty good for me to reply back or to call back. If not, I delete, right? So these few elements are at the foundation, I guess, of what the new way of buying is. And what do we do with this, right?
That's an excellent point. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, just think about going back, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. I was a sales rep back then, mm-hmm. in the old days, kind of a thing. But you
the
know,
dark ages.
When you consider the fact that you have, well, you know, self-educated, self-guided, whatever you want to call it, you know, customer that you're going in to talk to, who may potentially, in today's world, know more than you do.
Right.
That's a scary thought, yeah. for a rep. You know, that you have to change your behavior in the sense that you got to up your game. It is no longer appropriate to be in some initial conversations in a sales cycle and not understand as well as the customer who's
no
sitting
doubt.
On. But just the realization, as Michelle has said, you know, you have to realize that there is this self-guidedness going on out. You know, yep. as a precursor, there is the digital expectation. You know, they're already immersed in it to a certain area. You need to assume this, that right, they're already right. immersed in that. They yep. know the fabs. They know this kind of stuff. So what do you do with this? Well, I guess number one, you know, you need to be on point as a rep, you know, kind of going back over to our side of the table. You got to be on point with what you're offering and offering solutions that are meaningful mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. perhaps they can't be investigated. You're adding more contextual information to what they might already be able to find. But it's absolutely fascinating. And then, Michelle, another point that I'll throw on the table here, because I think you touched on it with the phone call kind of aspect, is the human aspect mm-hmm. of buying.
Right.
You know, there is so much that can be found and all these things, but there still is people, I'm still convinced, and
people
maybe
still buy from people.
People
yeah.
still buy from people. Yeah. So, you know, there is this human element that, yeah, okay, the phone call maybe has gone away, but there is still the interaction and people
right, right.
are going to feel comfortable buying from somebody else. So,
and they need to feel like there is a person.
Yeah.
That has
right.
their best interests in mind and yeah. not just a salesperson.
Or at least maybe I want to hang on to that world to a certain degree. I mean, did I buy my car online? Yes. Did I need a sales rep? No.
Right.
So maybe
right.
I'm complicit in, you know, part of this world where there is yep. no yep. human interaction. But in a B2B world where there's complex solutions that need to occur, I think there's still a human element.
Yeah. But I'm with you there.
Well,
because go ahead,
yeah,
Michelle.
Go ahead, Michelle.
You're touching on a very important point. Right. Lots of people are saying, well, the combination of this new behavior with AI and other tools out there, where is the human factor? And is selling and buying going to become a process where there's no people involved? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think the human factor is still going to be extremely, extremely critical. And the golden rule of you buying from someone you like still stands. And I think it will stand over time. It is just that the expectation of the buyer from you will vary and change over time, right? And one nugget that I could throw out there is, tell me what I don't know about my business. Don't tell me what I know, right? That's a very powerful quote for a VAR when they're involved into retail or T&L or manufacturing. There's so much dynamic going on in these verticals that a lot of them don't know what's the next step. A lot of them are unsure of what they should do moving forward. And I think, as an example, one of the role of the new generation seller is to be a trusted advisor, not on product, but on the business of the customer they're looking at, right? So tell me what I don't know about my business. Don't tell me what I know. That's pretty powerful. And if we sit back and think about this for a minute, that imposes that we self-educated as sellers into the verticals that we're addressing. As an example, 3PL is no longer. It is now up to 6PL. So there's 3PL, 4PL, 5PL, 6PL. Who knows about 6PL? Very, very few. So at one point in time, if you're going to be targeting that market and someone has got a 3PL operation, how do you elevate them to 4 and 5PL? And the customer is going to say, tell me more, right? And that's the trigger of trusted advisors. So there is a subtle change into our role when we're going to be in front of a customer. It is no longer product-based. It is business-based, right? How can you make me a better organization moving forward? How can you give me binoculars so that I look at the future and invest today step-by-step, technology-wise, software-wise, into where my industry is heading? So that's a very different approach to the business, right? So you require curious people, people that want to learn. So unlearn from things that were imposed on them in the past, sales forecasting and blah, blah, blah. It's all good and you got to do this, but we're going to be touching on AI a little bit later and AI will fill that gap. So if we shy away from this traditional way and get to the next level, being curious, wanting to self-educate, better understanding what's out there for the future, and become a true, true trusted advisor to a customer. And that's the shift that we're going to be seeing and we're seeing today.
But it speaks back to the demands that the modern, if you will, customer is looking for. Mm-hmm. If I could wrap that up in words, to me, it's like contextualizing the business outcome. You have to become an expert on making your customers understand the impacts of these business outcomes. Well, how do you get there? You have to understand their business, you know, almost better than they do, thing, or understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, what's happening in the marketplace and how they can benefit from the business outcomes that you're professing. It's not the features and the benefits. This is old news. You know, that will contextualize, you know.
Said, there's a spec sheet on every corner, you know, like, yeah exactly.
Those are table stakes.
I mean, that's easy. Yeah.
We got all that.
Stuff. Right.
Yeah. Right. But the trusted advisor, the consultant, that's why we keep, you know, harping on this, is because it is so important. And as you move into the future, it is all solution based. It is all about business outcomes.
Right.
That is what the value of the reseller or the seller is going to be bringing to the table. That they, again, contextualizes bringing the human factor, bringing the education, bringing, you know, their experience to bear.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah,
you know, and Michelle, I appreciate the idea of the generational thing not being about when you were born, because again, you and I, we're Gen X. We've, you know, we were there in the old days. You know, we know what it was like when you didn't have the internet, when people had to call, or when you had to go somewhere and have someone sell to you. You know, if you're wanting to buy a car, make a big purchase, or something like that, or go to a store. You know, all that kind of stuff. But we've evolved too. You know, to your point. Like when you bought your car, you did it online. I did the same thing last time I bought a car. I was, you know, I did all my research online. I was booking test drives online. I basically made it so that a physical sales rep didn't get the opportunity to really sell to me, you know,
like,
and I think that's where we are. And that's where, you know, generations that have, you know, maybe did grow up with something different, they are evolving and changing too. So yeah, we're not talking about just what millennials or Gen Z wants as a customer.
Absolutely not.
It's what everyone wants. No. We've all adapted to the modern world. So I appreciate that, because I think it's an important thing to understand, is like, we're not talking about literal next generation, but the iterative next generation of what it means to be a salesperson and what selling actually means. So then let's
make sure that the audience understands it is here now, right? We're talking about the new generation buyer. I'm sorry, it's today's buyers, right? It's what they're looking for today, right? Because there's a lot of uncertainties out there, and again, I'll repeat it. Not every one of them know what are some of the next steps that are logical for their business. A lot of them don't, right?
This is true.
Yeah, I agree. Well, then let's take that next logical step. We've already touched on this a little bit about the idea of what, you know, VARs, integrators, MSPs, what they need to be doing differently and how they approach this customer in order to make themselves that advisor. But you know, thinking about the modern buying cycle, the expectations of these customers now that, again, have all this information at their fingertips, all these opportunities to go out and find the info that they need before you ever get to them. And, you know, you were talking about the idea that maybe people are 50, 60% of the way, you know, there before you even get to them. Remember when we had James Cordy on a couple of years back talking about the whole challenger sales model, challenger customer.
Absolutely.
That was a big part of that is their research had found that, you know, buying groups in particular were already a significant portion of the way towards a decision before they ever would bring in someone outside to come in and pitch. So like there's already a lot of preconceived notions and expectations that are there. So from that VAR perspective, from, you know, the seller to the end user, what do you think is they have to change and do differently in order to go to market with this new type of customer?
So I guess one of the critical element, I said it in the previous dialogue, they've got to be curious, right? Being curious, number one, is, again, self-educate on the target verticals that they are going after, right? And I gave the example of TNL with 3PL to 6PL, but I could go to, you know, retail. What is retail 2.0? What is going to be retail 3.0, right? And I could go on. Manufacturing is very, very challenged these days. What is manufacturing 2 and 3.0? So first and foremost, use your knowledge of the past to assess the, you know, the vision of the future. And self-educate and educate your account managers, educate your people in the direction that the target audience is going, right? So that's, I think, item number one. Item number two, based on that, Steve Jobs, before he died years and years ago, said, the power is with storytellers, right? So get your people to build stories, right? Stories that will resonate with the audience. And what resonates with the audience? Don't tell me about the gear that you're selling. Don't tell me about the presence you have in 40 states out of so many. That's not the thing that is going to be resonating with the audience you're going to be addressing. What will resonate is basically what I said a little bit earlier. Tell me what I don't know, right? Give me insights, the challenger sales thing. Give me insights of what I should be focusing on and investing on, right? So the VAR's got to pivot slowly but surely, use their experience and their knowledge and mold it to that new reality and where their target audience is going. I guess number three, partnering. Mm. We are seeing in the channel more than ever partners partnering with partners, if it makes sense.
Yes, right.
Right? Mm-hmm. It could be an ISV with a VAR. It could be a startup. It could be an IT organization. Why? Because I think the mission for all of the audience that we're addressing, VARs, ISV, MSPs, is keep customers for life, right? That's the ultimate goal for all of us, keep customers for life. So never say no. Some of the asks that may come to a VAR, before saying no, go back to your channel. Go back to your community. Go back and assess if there's a way you could either address, recommend, or do soft intros between X and Y and Z so that you become, in the daily requirement of the customers, the trusted advisor, right? Let's call Dean. Dean will have the answer. Let's call Dean. Dean will have the answer, right? And I think if we can go to market with that philosophy in mind, with those two or three pillars, it is beyond and above the lines you represent and how you service these lines. These are some of the requirements that are no longer requirements. They're a given, right? If you're going to be talking to someone, they expect you to be servicing, have the knowledge of the product you're going to be introducing, being able to deploy it, manage it, and I could go on. That's a given today, right? Above and over, if you want to be the elite in our industry, it's got to be above and over the traditional stuff that you're providing. This is essential. It is the foundation of any reseller. But if you want to become the true go-to, I think some of the pillars that I've just described are essential.
Absolutely. Those are really good ones. And I'm going to throw a couple of additional things on the table because, you know, when you think about the modern buying cycle, I'm kind of zoning in on that phrase a little bit. Things have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, we just talked a little bit about, and you as a seller need to be able to react to that. So I'm going to throw on the table such things as like, you know, lowering the complexity of the sale, personalization is another one, and then referral and authenticity, and we'll get to that kind of at the end. But when you think about it, what we just talked about is, think about it now, we're all consumers. And so, as we've talked about, you know, if you're thinking about buying something, you dive in. You're online, you're on social, everywhere, finding out information. Well, now you've created this kind of information overload. And some people, it leads to just complete, you know.
They just shut down. Like, never mind, I'm not even going to mess with this.
So part of the buying cycle is understanding. And when you become a trusted advisor, part of that role is making that world a little less complex, you know, demystifying, kind of answering some of the complexities that have probably been learned through this information grab, contextualizing it once again into a business outcome. I think that is part of this modern buying cycle that you didn't have to deal with 20 years ago.
Right.
20 years ago, part of the selling process was education because they didn't, you know, these tools weren't available.
Right.
So again, you got to presume that, but what's worse, there might be information overload and you got to like, maybe there's some disinformation in there that you got to unravel and things of that nature. So there's that. Another interesting concept that I thought that I found is around personalization. You know, we heard this personalization thing, and then I guess that happens in the B2B world in the sense that, as a consumer, you know, it's always cool when I get something that's personalized to or something like that. And it makes me feel good, and hey, you know, they're my buddy type of thing. Well, that happens in the B2B world as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, custom, it doesn't have to be their name on it, but, you know, understanding that people are, it's part of the overall behavior to understand that, well, some customization, whether it's in a discount, whether it's in creating a specific bespoke business outcome for them, you know, and presenting it as a customized thing, that's an interesting concept that maybe, you know, modern buying cycles require some kind of customization. And then the last thing and Michelle was touching on this, referrals, you know, that's the partner community. Mm-hmm. And we talk about partners all the time. But what that adds to is your authenticity. I've been getting caught up in that word because I hear that a lot, right? Like, how do you cut through the BS? Well, authenticity. You know, does somebody feel that you're authentic in what you're in the business outcome that you're presenting? If you're not authentic, you've got some challenges, right? But I think that authenticity, it sounds like, is a part of that modern buying cycle. Are you authentic? Are you, you know, do you have the right partner group? These types of things, these are commanding concepts that you really got to think about, right?
Yeah.
In response to this modern
buyer.
Do you care? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you care?
Yeah. There you go.
Right. Are you going for a PO or do you really care about the customer's business?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And we're smart. We're savvy. We can spot that stuff.
Well, you know what? A couple of comments on what you just said. PO is to close on this. PO is the end result of things you have done properly, things you have done well. PO is not an objective. It is absolutely no objective. PO is the result of what you have done overall in the sales process, and you merit the order from the customer. Mm,
brilliant.
Piece number one. Piece number two, you touched on it. How many times do we present or have I seen people present to their customers? They've never been in their operations. They've never been in their stores. They've never been. They have never experienced the reality of the customer that they're presenting to, right? You're talking about personalization. That is one piece, right? Go in their store, go into their operation, go on a run with a truck driver that does delivery so you better understand their reality, right? Take notes, better assess what their daily challenges are. We are not seeing that enough in our industry, right? And when you're talking about personalization, if you're going to be sitting in front of a customer as a trusted advisor, as a VAR, as an ISV, and say, I have spent 2 days on the road with your people, and here's our results. That is pretty powerful, right? Versus comparing to a white paper that says the T&L industry does this, right? What comes to mind? Well, that's not my reality, right? So that piece is very important. Last, what we have not touched on that is absolutely critical, a lot of organizations still focus on a champion, right? One contact that they have within an organization. Well, in this modern world of ours, nobody wants to carry the bag, right? To a decision. So guess what? There are a number of people that make the decision. So the recommendation to our community would be, you know, widen your contacts, right? Know the critical contacts that are going to be sitting at a table making the ultimate decision on the supplier of the solution that customers are going to be looking for. And the Challenger Sale, to name one book, said a number of years ago, 5.4 groups or people are sitting together on average to make a decision on complex solutions. Do you know these 5.4 people, right? Do you have a relationship with these people, or you only have the champion? And a lot of reasons why you lose a deal, but the Challenger Sale says the number one is your inability to have a consensus amongst these people for choosing you. So let's keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Really good stuff.
You know, the one thing I think I'll add here also is there's a lot of discussion around SaaS models. And we obviously love that stuff because it's the recurring revenue idea and the idea of like, hey, you know, we want to put down a foundation that allows us to have regular touch points, that allows us to have regular connection, can help maybe with financing, all that stuff. But the other part of that I will caution about too is I feel like we as a society, as buyers in general, we're all starting to get subscription weary. You think about like, right, you know, like, you know, the whole streaming television, you know, model. If I'm going to get, you know, a practical example, how tired are we all of having 15 different streaming services in order to just watch the few shows that we enjoy watching?
Right. Yeah.
So I think this is an opportunity again as well. If you wanted to become that trusted person, if you want to become that call Dean, he'll have the answer and we'll respect whatever he tells us kind of attitude. It's going to be that idea of being able to be that one provider. If you remember when we had Shane Mishler on a few weeks back, you know, from the MSP perspective, talking about how sometimes people come to him and say, hey, I want this. And he's like, that's really not part of what we do. But they look at him and say, you're my tech guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So therefore, you are going to be the one who gets it done.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So if you're not willing to be the guy, the girl, the company to answer those questions and take care of it, even if it's not your domain of expertise, even if it means you've got to go out and find a partner or reach out to your partners, you are still the funnel that they want to come through. So I think the more you get, the more opportunity you have to maybe take all those SaaS models and funnel them into something that you are like, all right, I'm the endpoint. I'm going to be the one providing the solution. If in the background behind you, there are five other companies that are helping making all that happen, great. The customer, they don't care. As long as they get what they need, as long as that solution is what they want and makes life better for them, improves their business outcomes, gives them all the things that you've promised, they could care less what you're doing on the background, how many different other companies are involved.
Absolutely.
As long as they get what they need.
And that's what resellers of today have to do. Gone are the days of the one-trick pony.
Oh, yeah.
You can't be a one-trick pony that walks in the door
anymore,
and say, well, I only do this one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. That's
you'd be like, here's your barcode scanner. Rare. See you next time you need another one.
No. Yeah. Yeah. So
because they'll kick you to the curb partner, quickly.
Partner. Yes.
All right. Well, then let's get into the AI portion of things. I joke about, you know, we always got to talk about AI, but again, like everything else, there's an opportunity here. So, and we've talked a lot on the show about the solutions involving AI, the possibilities of AI, but let's talk about the sales side of things here. So how do you see that impacting selling, both from the perspective of maybe the things we are going to be selling that could include AI as part of the solution, but more importantly, how we go out and sell? How can AI help us sell better too?
So there's two pillars for me. There's AI as a product, and there's AI and the impact to sales. And by the way, it's always interesting when people come to us and say, what about AI, right? Can I look at the AI product? AI to define, we got to be really, really careful. AI is a tool. Is a tool to assess and to manage and drill into data, right? Into lots of data for complex solution or complex theories that human beings have got challenges to address, or that would take weeks and weeks and weeks to address. So we got to be careful of the simple definition of AI. AI is a tool to digest data and lots of data and procure outcomes, right? So let's keep that in mind. So having said that, AI requires good and lots of data. So let's move this to sales as an example. I did a lot of reading on the impact of AI on sales. So anything having to do with data, as an example, pricing, as an example, lead scoring, demand generation, right? Keep in mind, they're focused, the AI is a tool that digests and works data. So if you profile properly the target audience you're going after, and you load into a database the parameters to target the right audience and use a tool, call it LinkedIn or any other tools out there to target this audience, I'm telling you that moving forward, AI will have a better ability of lead generation than any sales rep that we've got. That's scary. It is not scary. That is real, right? Pricing, forecasting, right? Keep in mind, data again. If you sell to a customer called ABC and you've been selling to that customer for 10 years, the data will tell you when you propose how many days from the proposal to the PO on average. So that's one element of properly forecasting sales. But add on this a bunch of parameters that are data-driven. At the end of the day, the AI tools are going to be good forecasters of sales, believe it or not. So separate all things that are tied to data in the sales process, put it aside. AI will address that, right? What is AI not going to be addressing? The human factor. Dean, you touched on it a little bit earlier with the phone call. Right? The human factor, the judge, right? The relationship building, right? And this is where our community sales associate have got to be focusing more and more on, because the data-driven activities are going to be taken over better by AI tools, right? And it is a reality, right? Gartner just released a pyramid, Dean, I shared it with you guys. Pricing and lead scoring is number one and two for AI optimization, right? Number three is demand generation. So the top three things that we felt should be done by sales associates is now being driven, and it will be driven to through AI tools moving forward, Gartner says, right? And all studies say that. So what are we gotta focus on? Again, the human side of it, the judge side of it, the approach to the customer, and I'll go back to my storytelling about their business and what they don't know about their business and elements like that. So funny enough, a lot of associates do lots of work, data-driven, and all of a sudden, in a couple of years from now, and that's not too far off, all of this could be taken over by a tool that's properly chosen for an organization. So there is going to be time available. What do we spend this on? What I just described. And I think the biggest impact on sales roles is what I've just described to you all. And Gartner's talking about it. Deloitte's talking about it. A lot of significant leaders in our industry are all talking about where it's heading. But to summarize, that's what I just described to you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, going back to your first pillar, and I absolutely agree with everything that Michelle just said, in the sense that, you know, you've got this mountain of data. What is AI good at? It's good at gleaning business intelligence from data, far better than humans can do it. And so how is it changing the sales process? It's changing it and enabling sales in ways that were incomprehensible before. I mean, just getting back to, I'll just focus in on one, lead qualification. I mean, you know, the ability of artificial intelligence to look at data, look at how individuals are reacting to that, and then qualify that lead score, you know, is mind-boggling. But it's reality. You know, we call it, in marketing, as you know, there's such things as intent data. You know, we see, you know, we use tool sets that will tell us, oh, this company is doing all this research. Because of all these data factors, we can tell you that this company is looking into barcode technology.
Yep.
What so they intend to purchase sometime in the near future. So shift over to the other part that Michelle's talking about. Now becomes the interpersonal part of contextualizing that and bringing it home. But, you know, what's scary, though, when you think about it, is that, you know, I agree that I think the human element is always going to be, or at least I hope, the human element will always be a part of the process. And I think the reality is, in a complex sale, it has to, at least today, it has to be there. But when you think about how LLMs have impacted in the ability for even for there to be some of this humanistic dialogue that is happening along the way to carry the lead further and further down the funnel, if you will, closer and closer to the sale, I think AI is going to continue to disrupt there. You know, I mean, you can automate communications as though they were coming from the sales rep in a very conversational way, right? So it's like it's already bridging some of that human factor to it. But at the end of the road, there's going to still be that human element. But it is fascinating to see it transpire. But at the end of the road, if you're not, you know, I don't think, and Michelle, maybe you can comment on this, there's no fear of AI. There shouldn't be a fear of it. There should be an understanding of the tool and the utilization of the tool. Would you agree?
Listen, you know what? Routine work, right? Dull routine work is something from the past, right? Nobody wants to do it, right? Warehouse people, truck drivers, and I could go on. Sales included, right? Sales is a people relationship role. Well, if you take the AI tools, and we all know that sales rep hate forecasting and lead generation, let's be honest here, a lot of them don't appreciate this. All of a sudden you say there's a powerful tool here that is going to accomplish this for you on your behalf better than what you've ever achieved, to enable you to self-educate, to be out there with customers, to be a trusted advisor, to build relationships, real strong relationships, not just people you know, why would we fear, right? It will enhance our role into the true role that we should be assuming that we've all been describing over the years. I am a trusted advisor. But are we truly a trusted advisor? Question mark, right? So I'm absolutely in agreement. AI will give us the ability to refocus on what we should be self-educating on and what the buyers expect of us moving forward. And it's not data-driven.
You know, I think also it's going to separate the real salespeople from the people that are just kind of playing at it.
Well, yeah.
Because some folks, let's be honest, they're not, you know, and I admit I wasn't, you know, the kind of salesperson that loved to go out there mm-hmm. and be the salesperson. Some mm-hmm. people were much better at that mm-hmm. and are very good at that. And those, I think, are the people that are going to succeed in this new world because they're going to lean into like, all right, I'm going to lean on the AI to help me with all the background stuff, the mundane stuff. So I can get out there and do what I do best, which is build relationships and develop, you know, mm-hmm. conversations and understand and learn and, mm-hmm. you know, partners and all that kind of stuff, all that good stuff that we've just been talking about here to meet this new and evolving customer out there. Imagine if you can outsource the mundane parts of your job to something that'll make that much easier so that you can get back to the actual selling. And I think that will hopefully make it that, so that more salespeople are much more engaged in the relationship aspect of business and engaged in the I want to be your trusted advisor.
And you know what? To maybe keep on the positive side of things, the pandemic. The pandemic created one thing amongst others, one thing that is very, very positive. Organization all of a sudden don't know what to do. They don't know what to do, how to do business moving forward. What do? They reach out to their trusted advisors, right? So we've seen rising stars in our industry just based on that, because these were true trusted advisors. They sat in committees, they did whiteboard sessions, they tried to understand A to Z's operation and recommend what is logical to the end user customer. The only thing that we're talking here today is how do we maintain a philosophy like this moving forward? It will require tools, and AI is one powerful one.
All right. Well, hey, in a moment, we're going to let you know how Blue Star can help you go out and meet the evolving needs of your customer. Because, you know, I think we have a part to play in all of this,
right?
Too.
Yeah.
But first, as always, thank you so much to the sponsors of the Tech Connect podcast and Blue Star's Tech Connect program. We appreciate your support. Of course, if you like our show, the best things you can be doing to let us know is to let us know in some way. So if you're watching on YouTube right now, hit the like for this episode. Subscribe to our channel if you're not already subscribed. Drop a comment to us in the comments. We want to hear from you what you liked about the episode. Was there something interesting that Michelle said that you want us to dig a little further into? Do you agree with something Dean said? Do you think we're idiots and you just want to tell us off? Well, maybe that comment. We don't need that one. Be constructive criticism, we will appreciate. That's fine. But more importantly, you know, if you're out there and you have ideas for the show, if you have topics you want us to dig into, mm-hmm. something we said today resonated, you want us to scratch a little bit deeper, maybe we can drag Michelle back on or find someone to come on and talk to about a specific aspect of sales or the customer that you want us to dig into.
Give us the idea.
Tell us.
We'll give you a shirt.
That's it.
A brand new shirt, by the way.
There you go. A brand new Tech Connect podcast t-shirt.
That's right.
Coming soon. The design is pretty much mapped out. We just got to get into the printing phase. So send us your ideas. You can either drop it at the link in the show notes. You can find us on LinkedIn. Leave comments on any of our posts there. Or you can also email us directly, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, let's wrap up today. First of all, the little VAR value. And, you know, like I said, Michelle, Blue Star obviously has a role in this whole picture of figuring out, you know, how we meet the challenge of the evolving and the next level of the customer. So how do you see Blue Star's role moving forward with these changing expectations from the customers to help our partners sell better, help them grow their business in order to reach the new demand?
So one word that comes to mind, and it's we are the orchestrator. And I dearly believe that Blue Stars will probably shift from being a distributor to an orchestrator. right? A distributor is essentially, we sell products to the market, availability, pricing, and I could go on. Lots of people do this, and lots of people do this extremely well. But if we move to a Bluestar 2.0 or 3.0, what have we spoken about this morning, right? New requirements. Tell me what I don't know. Partnering with partners, right? And you know, TNL 2.0, 3.0, retail 2.3.0. All of this is a melting pot if you don't have an orchestrator, right? And I'm of the opinion, and that's what we truly believe in, is becoming the orchestrator. So what is the future of some of the verticals that we're addressing? How could we better educate our community, right? Help our partners, VARs, vendors, never say no. How do we ensure that they keep their customers as long as they can, right? Do we bring new technologies? And I think it is a must. As an orchestrator, you work with the environment you are in today, but the dynamic of the IT industry and the technology industry is so huge that you gotta be curious. So what we're asking our customers to become, we have to be. So we've got to be curious. We've got to be thinking out of the box. But at the end of the day, like the ISV community that we are addressing, the VAR community that we are addressing, the vendor community that we're representing, I am of the opinion that we should be the focal point of orchestrating all of this to the benefit of the entire channel, if it makes sense, right? That imposes on us that we've got, you know, ISV programs, we've got potentially a marketplace, we've got an education track or a better education track, and I could go on. But it will, in my mind, it is already, but will also in the future be beyond just distributing hardware product, if it makes sense.
Yeah. I love the word orchestration, and I agree. And it has manifested itself in a couple ways, as Michelle already alluded to. You know, in order to orchestrate, you need to bring to the table and enable. So we have programs like our Tech Connect program that brings ISV community into the channel and helps the sellers, the resellers enable themselves. We're developing such things as innovation labs because we need to, as a channel, we need to understand some of these new and emerging technologies that are on the edge. And how are we going to bring these in, like robotics, and challenge ourselves in saying, well, how are we going to bring this into the channel and enable these partners? Well, we need some labs to make that happen, and innovation needs to occur. That's why we present new opportunities like electric vehicle charging, programmatic digital at home, and robotics. These are all things that, you know, we're orchestrating that's why I love this word. We're helping to orchestrate how the channel can move forward, and then that also manifests itself in enablement. You know, this is why we do end user demand generation. This is why you work so hard to enable, you know, our resellers and our ISV partners and our partner community in general, come up with solutions and then go out to the marketplace and present them and drive that business back through. The education, a key point, right? We have to educate folks, which is why we're doing, again, innovation labs and things of that nature. So it all kind of fits around that orchestration model. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, if I'm going to take the orchestral idea to its next logical step, you know, like when you have an orchestra and you've got all the different musicians and all the different instruments, individually, they can all make great music. Mm-hmm. Like they're talented. They know what they're doing. But you throw them together without any kind of actual orchestration, without someone, you know, kind of managing it all, it's just noise. And that's what our job is. Our job is to take the noise of all the stuff that's out there and bring it together in a way that's meaningful for customers when they get those solutions. So good stuff. I like this a lot. All right, so there we go. That's a, maybe that's what our new slogan will be, Blue Star, your solutions orchestrator. let's go with that. All right, let's wrap up, as always, with our favorite segment, What's Tech Connecting With You? This is where we get to talk about something in the world of technology, innovation, business, science, discoveries, whatever it is. Something we just feel like chatting about today. So, Michelle, I'll let you kick it off here. What's Tech Connecting With You right now?
So, you know what? There's a news that was released to the market a while ago that will be impacting industries and our industry quite a bit. And the news is the end of cookies, right? So in 2024, we're going to be seeing the end of cookies, right? What does this mean, right? This means that there's millions and millions and millions of dollars that were invested into your world, which is marketing, through cookies and through Facebook and Google and whatnot. And all of a sudden, this is gone. So that's going to be very, very interesting. And, you know, we have trusted advisors at Blue Star that bring us insights. But this element of cookies will definitely impact some of the large verticals that we're addressing, retail and hospitality, right? So it will be interesting. And I'm focusing on this lately, because that money is going to be available, my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So where is the money going to be going? Technology, ISVs, EV chargers with screens. I don't know. But it is absolutely a big news. And there's billions of dollars into this that's going to be spent another way.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm focusing on.
Yeah, it's fascinating to kind of watch that unravel, to use a word, you know, because, you know, I get it. Google's trying to address the whole privacy concerns that everybody has. You know,
probably a little overdue. Yeah,
a little bit overdue. And as we've commented, you know, other whatever countries have GDPR and blah, blah, blah. Even Canada's better than the US. And stuff like that. But so they announce it, freaks out the whole world. Then they delay it for a little bit. But to Michelle's point, it's coming down. Yeah. So even though they've got new tools, I guess it's called Topics API or something like that, that's a part of their sandbox. The point is, it's going to be disruptive.
Right.
And so, you know, from a sales standpoint, I can't, you know, if I'm like Google revenue officer, I'd be like, what are we doing? We just disrupted this whole business model. And now these dollars are going to start floating elsewhere, which is why we are.
Like, hey, what are you going to do with that cookie money?
Yeah, we profess the pedo and stuff like that, where, okay, yeah, those dollars are going to be now out there. It's fascinating.
Whole new marketing world now.
Yeah. All crazy, right, crazy, crazy.
All right, Dean, what's Tech Connecting With You?
So the headline for me, I don't know why I'm into like nuclear power and nuclear
You do bring
stuff.
That up quite a bit.
I know,
yeah.
I do. Okay. So NASA and DARPA plan nuclear rockets to take humans up to Mars, which is kind of cool. So Elon's, you know, still, I don't know what this relationship between SpaceX and NASA is.
I'm not sure if they know
this
weird,
but NASA's still, okay, so we have DARPA, right, which is the whole think tank around in the U.S. government around just trying to stay one step ahead of everybody else as it relates to weapons and things of that nature. So they've come up with, and I love this the name of this operation. It's called the Demonstration Rocket for Agile Cislunar Operations, or DROCO.
Okay.
I don't know why the governments love their DROCO, but anyway, this plan.
I feel like they start with an acronym and work backwards.
Maybe that's it.
You know?
Yeah. Well, no, we want to call this DROCO. Yeah, so exactly. What could that stand for? I think you're dead on there. So anyway, they're going to test nuclear thermo rockets in space, which, you know, thermonuclear stuff is like, that's bad stuff. I mean, this is like.
Right.
world-ending kind of technology if not used correctly. But apparently, if you put it into rockets, it's like this unlimited fuels kind of source. And that's why there's a kind of an effort, and that's why DARPA's involved in it, because I'm sure they're doing some black box stuff that, you know, we can kind of harness this energy into a rocket. And then now we have this unlimited, they go get people there faster and all that kind of good stuff. So anyway, don't be surprised within, it looks like by 2027, you could start hearing about nuclear rockets that are going to start to be tested. That's kind of fascinating.
I mean, it's an important point because, you know, if we want to get into this whole idea of interstellar travel and routinely going to the moon and Mars and exploring our galaxy, the fuel part is the first thing you're going to have to sort
Absolutely.
I mean, we can't just expect the Star Trek warp drive to show up anytime soon.
Look at the size of that super heavy rocket that they're testing at SpaceX. It is ginormous. Yeah. And it's like, there's got to be
It's not like just like a tank of gas you can fill up and then you're good. Like, I just need to fill up and then I can get to Mars. Yeah. Like, no, it's not that simple.
Refuel.
Yeah, refuel. Hey, the fuel light's on. Tap, 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 tap.
Is that what we're going to be talking about in another, like, 20 years? Or are we going to be trying to sell, like, solutions for rocket charging, you know, somewhere in the asteroid belt or something?
We better get into thermonuclear then. But anyway, so what's Tech Connecting with you?
All right, so mine, I'm a little on the more practical side of things. I'm going to go a little old school in technology of the simple book, the actual physical book. So the Paris Olympics are coming up this summer. They got the Summer Olympics in Paris this year. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently as part, you know, it is when a host city gets the Olympics, there's a lot of change that has to happen in order to manage, you know, whether it's the facilities for the events or also just figuring out like where are people going to stay, crowd control, you know, what do you need to change about the infrastructure of a city? But apparently something that was going to happen that caused a lot of an outcry was the iconic book stalls that are on the River Seine.
Okay.
So I don't know if you are with this.
No, what's a bookstall?
In Paris, basically, like, there are just, like, booksellers that are set up along the river.
Oh, I see. I gotcha. Yeah.
That, you know, have these little stalls, these little kiosks, pop-up kind of things. And now, mind you, this is a 160-year tradition.
Okay.
This is not something new. This is something that's been going on for a very long time where these booksellers are always out there peddling their wares and they have books for sale. It's just, it's part of the iconography of Paris when you go is to wander along and have the opportunity to go buy some books. Well, they wanted to shut those down and basically take nearly all of them out and make them stay away during the Olympics because of security concerns, which I get from that point of view.
Okay.
You know, having all these little pop-up shops could be potentially, you know, you know, places where people could hide out or whatever.
Okay,
you know.
Fair enough.
But again, it is part of the iconography of the city.
Yeah,
and it's part of if you're a host city, you want people to experience your city as it's meant to be experienced. You know, it'd be like, you know, like, okay, we're going to take down the Eiffel Tower, you know, for this. Like, no, you're not going to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there was a big outcry about it, and President Macron eventually stepped in and said, "No, we're going to preserve this integrity. Like, we'll amp up what we need to do security wise to make sure that they're
safe." Which is the right decision, if you ask me.
But we're going to leave the booksellers in place.
And okay,
so that has been preserved. So
A little
bit of old school, you know, tradition and history doesn't get moved out of the way for modernization.
There you go. See?
Yeah. I can appreciate that sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
So. All right.
Fair enough.
That is what's Tech Connecting with us today. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate
having you on the show. Hey, folks, it is time for us to unplug. But, you know, until next time, go, you know, figure out how to fuel your rocket to Mars.
Yes. There you go.
and you know, find out what's at the bottom of your cooking jar now that you're emptying it out there.
Fair enough.
And as always, folks, please stay connected. Technic Podcast is brought to you by Elo. Dean, self-service, it's never been easier.
No. Oh, really? Yeah. Never been easier?
Never been easier.
That's a bold claim.
Well, I mean, if you're Elo.
Oh, I see.
Having Elo product.
Yes.
It's never been easier.
Now it's just zippity-doo.
Introducing, maybe not introducing because it's been out a little while, but still, pretty could be new to you.
Okay.
Yeah, anything could be new to you.
Yeah.
Elo Wallaby Pro Kiosk Stand.
Nice.
Wallaby Pro is changing the industry by making it easier than ever to configure interactive self-service solutions. You can choose from wall, counter, or floor models engineered with configurations to fit any space in retail, restaurants, hospitality, healthcare, and corporate environments. Just add a 22, 24, or 27-inch touchscreen display. Lots of opportunities and options.
Yes,
there.
Sir.
All right, but let's talk about more options.
What? Wait, more?
Because, again, it's Elo.
It can already go in any environment.
They don't just give you a screen and say, bye.
Right.
They've got plenty of options to modernize it and modularize it. Is modularize even a word?
It is now.
Yeah. There you go. You can copyright that, Elo. Just... maybe slip you a couple bucks under the table. How about a custom branded backer board?
Nice.
Ceiling pole to minimize footprint.
Ooh, yeah.
Add a printer. You can add an ADA keyboard, an assist button. You can use Elo's Edge Connect to attach accessories.
Holy
all
moly.
All kinds of good stuff you can add on with that.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Wildly Pro stand offers easy to access concealed housing for a power strip, power bricks, compute devices, cables, whatever you need to shove in there. And keep
so it even, it looks sexy and, you know, all clean.
Of course.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we're going for here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ready to help your customers design the most customizable self-service solutions? Start with the Wildly Pro. Contact your Elo representative to learn more.